Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online, inviting you to subscribe to our other podcast called The Grave Talks. It's where I sit down and interview individuals who've had extreme paranormal situations happen to them in their lives. Just search The Grave Talks on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Be sure to press subscribe and give us some stars to help spread the word that this show exists. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, Ed and Lorraine Warren's legacy. Ed and Lorraine Warren were pioneers in the world of paranormal research and demonology. Their research helped many families find peace and answers when others assumed they were losing their minds. Ed and Lorraine Warren have investigated countless cases, including many that are now horror icons, including the Amityville Horror, The Conjuring, and the Enfield Poltergeist. And Lorraine Warren's grandson, Christopher Edward McKinnell, now continues the legacy of his grandparents as head of the Warren Legacy Foundation for Paranormal Research. Today, we learn about what it was like growing up with Ed and Lorraine Warren as grandparents, and what it was like learning the field firsthand from these paranormal trailblazers, as we talk with their grandson, Christopher Edward McKinnell, on The Grave Talks.
Well, my very first memory was being at my great-grandmother's, my grandmother's mother's house, and I was supposed to spend the night there, and I was afraid of ghosts. And it was my grandmother who told me there was no such thing as ghosts. So I think at that point I was already starting to grasp that something odd was going on. And I was only three or four. But I really truly understood when I was about 4 years old. My sister was only three at the time, and a little friend of hers locked me in the museum. That was when I had my first true exposure to what my grandfather and grandmother were all about.
When you got locked in the museum, and I totally get it, kids playing. I got locked in a basement, but it didn't have a bunch of possessed objects in it. They just played Thriller for me over and over and scared me. I can't imagine being locked in the museum. Were you aware of what the museum was at that moment in time, or was it just kind of like, well, that's their collection of stuff down the way?
Oh, no. By that point, I knew what I was dealing with. I remember my pure sense of terror.
Okay.
I knew what that stuff was, and that I couldn't touch it, and that it was evil.
Mm-hmm. What happened when you got locked in that museum?
Well, happily, my grandfather was in his office, and I didn't know it. And he came running out and rescued me.
Yeah.
So, Gramps, by the way, never Grandpa.
Just Gramps?
Gramps.
I love how every grandparent has a slightly different way of what they like to be referred to. I still don't know what I'm going to go by someday, but...
Yeah, well, he you know, World War II, a true, like, John Wayne was his hero. Mm-hmm. That was not somebody you could call Grandpa.
Sure.
He was Gramps.
Okay. And of course, for our listeners who are joining us, we're talking about your grandparents, who are Ed and Lorraine Warren, which we, of course, mentioned in the intro of the show. You know, that's got to be interesting. And so you have this family that you know, were you aware at the time of just how, you know, how in-depth their investigations had become, how you know, well-known, how big the investigations they were involved in at that point in time?
No, because I was born in 64. They didn't actually start doing the big stuff like Amityville until 73.
Okay. So,
you know, so I think Annabelle came around in 71, 72.
Mm-hmm. So you had kind of a front row seat for as they went out to these hauntings and investigations and came back home and you know, What was that like? What were some of the experiences? And we can get into greater detail, but just from a more of a wider perspective, what was it like as, you know, you go over to Grandma and Grandpa's house and, well, they just got back from Amityville. They just got back from Enfield. You know, what, you know, that had to be an interesting Sunday dinner or whenever you had dinner with them, what that was like.
It didn't come up very much. No. Mostly because, and this probably is not going to come as a surprise to anybody, I was terrified of the stuff as a child.
Sure.
I could not sleep without a light on. I had night terrors. I was always hearing things. Turned out I really actually was hearing things. But I didn't know that at the time. And so it wasn't something that I really got into until I was 16 and my grandfather decided it was time for me to get involved. And he brought me on my first case, and it was one of these unbelievably over-the-top poltergeist cases, pounding noises that shook the walls, growling, clawing. This was just as we're walking in. You know, most of the furniture had to be removed because it was flying around. There was still some beds upstairs, a recliner and a couch downstairs. And as we're going around the house, you know, the crucifix is upside down. The pull-down stairs to the attic were pulled down. These were stairs that had come flying down and hit the woman in the house, knocking her out one night after a demon had walked into the bedroom, picked up her rosary beads and spun them in front of her as if to say, you think these are going to save you? And my grandfather had me sit upstairs in that master bedroom in the dark for an hour, listening to things on my own, and told me, let him know if anything changed. After I dealt with that, we went downstairs. We did some religious provocation to try to figure out what we were actually dealing with. Around 3 o'clock in the morning, two hulking black shapes came down the stairs. The woman screamed that her face was on fire. And when we looked, we could see claw marks appearing on her face. A pot that had Holy Church incense picked up out of the kitchen, flew around the corner, came straight at my head, and just veered off, hit the window behind me. The shade flew up. The woman screaming she wants to get out. We're on the radio, on the telephone, during all of this, with Brian Dow, WTIC, out of Hartford, back in the day. And so I'm trying to help this woman, because I'm thinking, all right, well, I can help her get out of the house. I'm ready to go. The lights are flying on and off, and as I get to the front door, it's now locked, and it wasn't. It hadn't been, I mean. The recliner I had just been in flipped over. The door opened on its own, and she and I got out. After that night, I've never been afraid of anything ever again.
So you literally went from, I'm afraid of ghosts, I don't really like this, to Grandpa saying, hey, let's go do this together. It'll be a fun bonding experience.
Yeah.
I mean, were you hesitant at first to go along? Did you have a choice of going along? What was that like?
Oh, yeah, I definitely had a choice.
Okay.
Absolutely. And at the time, I was 16 years old. And I was kind of excited about it.
Okay. Kind of.
And I was going with the great Ed Warren.
Yeah.
I figured I'll be safe.
You got to a point of more curiosity, I'm assuming, than I guess probably fear.
Well, the night before, I was still with my light on in the room. But the night after, no.
I've
got no. I love the dark now.
So when you went into this case, can you say which case this was, or was it more of a private one?
Well, you know, actually, it's not a famous case. Okay. And I've never understood why it isn't, but it was up in Lee, Massachusetts.
Okay.
Long, interesting case, actually, but
yeah. How did that, since we're talking about that one specifically, and I'd like to talk about obviously several, but how did that one begin? How did that call into your grandfather and grandmother begin?
Okay. Well, the husband and wife, they had two children, and he worked overnight in the local mill. So he was a third shift worker, and she was alone. She had, according to my grandfather, this all happened, and I personally would not agree with this. He felt it was because she had converted to Christianity from Judaism. That just never seemed right to me. But one night, she's in her bed, and a little boy ghost walks in and says, "Where do all the lonely people go?" And she didn't know what to make of that. She called in the local priest. He did a blessing of the house, and the spirit disappeared, but it was replaced by this dark entity. And that's when things, when all hell broke loose. I forgot to mention, they had done some kind of either seance or something with the Ouija board to contact this boy ghost. Mm-hmm. Said that it was the uncle of the husband in this case, and that he had been pushed out of a horse carriage by his twin brother and was killed under the wheels of the carriage. So there was some attachment immediately to this poor ghost. See, unfortunately, and I'm sure your listeners have heard this before, demonic entities will often appear as children. Mm-hmm. The reason they do that is you then become caring of them, you want to bond with them, and you voluntarily create an attachment.
Sure. It's creating that trust factor. And
exactly, and opening a door.
And who wouldn't help an innocent child who's coming and asking about where do all the people go, or the lost people go? I mean, that's of course you want to help.
Of course. And that's what the Annabelle entity did.
Yeah.
Exact same thing.
And I mean, I'm assuming, you know, they would get quite a few letters. Obviously, we're talking a time before email and before Twitter and before everything else. People calling, writing in and saying, "Hey, I have something going on here. Can you help me?" How did they go about at the time when they were actively out there investigating and helping folks? How did they determine, you know, which ones they could allot their time to? Because obviously there's only so much time to allot to going into these cases.
It was a whole different world back then. Honestly, I used to go on lecture tours with them. And that's where they really got most of their cases from, was when they were doing their lectures. Mm-hmm. You know, people would see them, they would hear about them, they'd come there and they'd tell them what was going on. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother, being easily one of the very best psychics I've ever seen in my life, and I mean, I have an actual support group with hundreds of them, and nobody compares to my grandmother. I've seen her stand out front of a house we were there for a TV show called PM Magazine, and there was also a local reporter with us, and he had notes on this house that he showed me. He hadn't written up the story yet. And as he's showing me all these notes about what had taken place in the house, my grandmother's listing them off from standing in front of the house. I'm like, holy crap. I didn't know my grandmother was Professor X. Wow. I was truly floored. Yeah, so she was always very good at that. And my grandfather, you know, he was a demonologist.
Yeah.
He could tell if you were full of crap or not.
Sure.
Or if it was psychological. You know, and yeah, most of the time it's psychological.
I hope you enjoyed your 15-minute preview of our new podcast, The Grave Talks. Be sure to subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download podcasts to not miss any episode of the show. New episodes every single Monday. Just search for The Grave Talks. And then press subscribe. Give us a review while you're at it and some stars that will help us grow in the rankings and let other folks know that the show exists to make an even better show for you. The Grave Talks. Check it out at thegravetalks.com.